Welcome. Today, we're discussing an interesting content about one of the most fundamental, yet widely misunderstood, concepts in all of physics, entropy.
I'm so excited to get into this. It's everywhere, from the Big Bang to, well, to a cup of tea cooling down, but there's so much confusion. Where do we even start?
Let's start with a deceptively simple question. What does the Earth get from the Sun? Most people say energy, or heat, or light.
Yeah, energy. That's what I would say. We get a ton of energy from the sun every single day. It powers everything.
Right, but here's the twist. For the Earth's temperature to remain stable, it has to radiate the exact same amount of energy back into space. Energy in equals energy out.
Whoa, wait a second. If we're just breaking even on energy, then what are we really getting? What's the point?
Exactly. That's the core of it. We're getting something much more special than just energy. We're getting low entropy energy, concentrated, useful energy. And to understand that, we have to go back to the 1820s and a brilliant French engineer named Sadi Carnot.
Ah, the age of steam. I'm guessing this has something to do with steam engines, right? They were the big tech of the day.
Precisely. Carnot wanted to figure out what made steam engines tick, specifically what limited their efficiency. The best ones were only about 3% efficient. He imagined a perfect, idealized engine. No friction, no heat loss, just to find the absolute theoretical limit.
And what did this ideal engine look like? Was it some kind of complex machine?
It was beautifully simple, in theory. You have a hot source and a cold source. The engine takes heat from the hot source, uses it to do work, like pushing a piston. But, and this is the crucial part, it has to dump some of that heat into the cold source to complete the cycle and reset the piston.
So even a perfect engine can't be 100% efficient? That seems counterintuitive. If there's no friction, where does the energy go?
It's not lost. It's just unusable for work in that cycle. You have to get rid of it to return the engine to its starting state. Carnot realized the efficiency doesn't depend on the engine's design, but solely on the temperature difference between the hot and cold sources. The bigger the difference, the more efficient it is.
Okay, I see. So you can't convert all the heat into work because some of it has to be, you know, discarded. That waste heat is what led to the idea of entropy, isn't it?
You got it. Decades later, a physicist named Rudolf Clausius gave it a name, entropy. He defined it as a measure of how spread out or dispersed energy is. When energy is concentrated, like in a hot bar, it has low entropy. It's useful. When it spreads out to the environment, entropy increases, and the energy becomes less useful.
So the second law of thermodynamics, that entropy always increases, is just saying that energy naturally tends to spread out. It's why a hot coffee cools down, not the other way around.
Exactly. But then Ludwig Boltzmann came along and added another layer, probability. He said, it's not that energy can't flow from cold to hot. It's just mind-bogglingly astronomically improbable.
Wait, wait. You're telling me my cold drink could spontaneously get colder while the air around it gets hotter? That breaks my brain a little bit.
Theoretically, yes. But the odds are so low, you'd never ever see it happen. Think of a solved Rubik's Cube. There's only one solved state. But there are quintillions of messed up random states. Any random turn you make is almost guaranteed to move it from the one unlikely ordered state to a much more likely disordered state. That's entropy in a nutshell.
That is a fantastic analogy. Okay, so if the universe is constantly moving toward a more probable, spread out, messy state, how on earth do we have life? We are incredibly complex, ordered structures.
That's the billion-dollar question. And the answer goes back to our first point, the sun. The Earth isn't a closed system. The sun showers us with highly concentrated, low-entropy energy in the form of high-energy photons.
And we take that neat, bundled-up energy and make a mess with it.
We are masters at it. Life is spectacularly good at taking low entropy energy and converting it into high entropy energy. Plants capture sunlight, animals eat plants, and at every step, that concentrated energy gets used, spread out, and eventually radiated back into space as diffuse, low-energy infrared photons. For every one high-energy photon we get, we send about 20 low-energy ones back out.
So life doesn't violate the second law. It accelerates it. We are agents of cosmic chaos. That is a wild thought.
It's a perspective shift, isn't it? One physicist, Jeremy England, even proposed that life might be an inevitable consequence of the second law. If you have a system with a constant energy source, structures will naturally arise that are good at dissipating that energy. And what's better at that than life?
Unbelievable. Okay, so that explains life on Earth. But this whole process implies that time has a direction, right? From order to disorder. From low entropy to high entropy. Where did that initial low entropy come from?
From the very beginning. The Big Bang. The universe, right after it began, must have been in a state of incredibly low entropy. This is called the past hypothesis.
But hold on. Wasn't the early universe a hot, dense, uniform soup of particles? That sounds pretty mixed up and disordered to me. Shouldn't that be a high entropy state?
But you're forgetting the most important force on a cosmic scale, gravity. With gravity, a uniform, smooth distribution of matter is actually a highly unlikely, low-entropy state. Gravity wants to pull things together. Clumpiness is the more probable, high-entropy state.
Got it. So the universe started smooth, which was low-entropy for gravity, and ever since, gravity has been clumping matter together into stars and galaxies, turning potential energy into heat and radiation, and increasing entropy all along the way.
You've nailed it. And this process created the most entropy-rich objects we know of, black holes. Thanks to the work of Jacob Bekenstein and Stephen Hawking, we know that the entropy of a black hole is enormous, proportional to its surface area. In fact, almost all the entropy in the current universe is locked up in supermassive black holes.
The numbers are just staggering. So the universe started with an incredibly tiny fraction of the entropy it has now. All of history, all of life, everything that has ever happened, is just the universe unfolding from that initial improbable state towards a more probable one.
It's the very reason time seems to flow in one direction. It's the universe moving from an unlikely past to a more likely future. The ultimate end of this is the so-called heat death of the universe, where everything is so spread out and at the same temperature that nothing interesting can ever happen again.
That sounds a little bleak, but there's a bright side, right? We're not there yet.
Exactly. It's like pouring milk into tea. The most beautiful, complex patterns don't exist when they're separate. That's low entropy. And they don't exist when they're fully mixed. That's high entropy. The complexity, the beauty, life itself, it all happens in that dynamic, messy middle. We're living in the interesting part.
What a powerful way to look at it. We are the beautiful patterns that emerge as the universe unfolds. That's a thought that will stick with me. This has been fascinating.
It's a concept that truly touches everything. It's been a pleasure exploring it. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.